Thanks for coming in, Mr. Mahoney. Do you have your member ID card?
Yep, I have it right here in the FEP Blue app. See?
Great.
It's awesome. The app can also help me find a provider and keep tabs on my deductibles.
Okay, can I...
Oh, yeah, and my out-of-pocket spending and visit limits, and I can call the nurse line.
I'm really glad it does all that, but I only need to see your member ID card.
Oh, that's it? Why didn't you say so?
Fearless is just one tap away. With the new FEP Blue app from Blue Cross and Blue Shield, you can access your health benefits on the go. Download it now at fepblue.org/app.
You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Seahawks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the fastest growing sports audio network in the world. This is Vincent Verhey of Football Outsiders, and I'm back talking your Seattle Seahawks and all the news around the NFL. Thanks for hanging out today, and let's hang out again tomorrow. Be sure you and your friends subscribe to the podcast, because we're going to have some fun. We're going to do our box score breakdown today of the playoff win over the Detroit Lions. First, I'm going to give you just some of my overall thoughts. When you win a playoff game by 20 points, it's hard to find much to complain about, but I'm going to do it anyway. They should have scored, they being the Seahawks. They had a lot of opportunity to hang a lot more points in Detroit. That was a very, very bad defense they played, and they made that defense look good for about 2.5 quarters. And they're going to need way more, they're going to need way better execution on offense next week against Atlanta, because Atlanta, I can almost promise you, if I do, I will promise you, Atlanta will score more than 6 points against Seattle. That's just going to happen. So 26 points probably won't be enough to get a win next weekend against Atlanta. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is there is a game next weekend against Atlanta. It's in Atlanta. It is Saturday afternoon Seattle time. I am very pleasantly surprised they managed to avoid the 10 a.m. start on Sunday morning. But, yeah, you know, there's no such thing as a bad win, especially in the postseason. Anyway, you can get it done. That's great. It could have gone differently, which would have left me more optimistic for this week. We'll have a lot more to talk about it, but there's still a lot of problems with the Seattle team, and Atlanta will be better poised to exploit those problems than Detroit was. That's the bad news. The good news is, in some ways, Seattle played much better than usual against Detroit. The offensive line, which we'll talk about later in the week, they seem to have found the five-man personnel grouping that works best. I wrote about this in the playoff preview at footballoutsiders.com, which you can all still go read, although it's a preview, so you can see where I was right and where I was wrong. But the key to this point is, with the starting five lineup of George Fant, Mark Lewinsky, Justin Britt, Jermaine Effetti, and Gary Gilliam, when those five guys start a game, they're averaging 27 points per game this year. And they scored, of course, 26 against Detroit, so right on the nose with that average. When any of those guys is not in the starting lineup, that average drops below 20. So we're talking about that combination of five guys making a touchdown per game difference in what this team can score and what they can do. So it looks like they finally found their starting five. Everyone's finally healthy, and the coaches have stopped messing with it. They've realized Bradley Sowell is death to Russell Wilson, so they've kept him out of the lineup unless absolutely necessary. So the running game is much improved. Thomas Rawls had his first 100-yard game. In fact, the best game he's had since, I believe, it was like week 14 last year against San Francisco when he had 200. And it was Seattle's best rushing day of the year by far. That's a very positive sign. The pass blocking was also great. The passing game struggled at times, but it was the first time this year, I think, when the protection has been good, but Russell Wilson has not been able to find open receivers. Now, without doing an in-depth film study, which I have not done, I can't tell you if that's because the receivers were not getting open or if they were getting open and he just couldn't see them for whatever reason. But this is the first time where the passing game struggles should be blamed on the backs and receivers and not the offensive line. So quite a turnaround in that department. Run defense, as always, stellar. The Lions had one run, gained more than 4 yards. The pass defense, much better than I expected, especially in coverage. The Lions didn't try deep throws very often. When they did, they were actually very successful. It's kind of strange they didn't try more. That may have to do with Matthew Stafford's finger injury. But I am a little concerned that this team, they didn't allow completions to the deep middle of the field, really since Earl Thomas was drafted. And even in the, I think it was 10 games he ended up starting this year, they only allowed 2 completions to the deep middle. And that number skyrocketed in and the games he missed. And, of course, the Lions, just in this game, they had two completions to the deep middle of the field just in this one game after only giving up two of them in 10 games with Earl Thomas. So those are my quick thoughts on the game itself. We'll go ahead now and get into some of the numbers. As mentioned, and as we all know, it was a 26-6 win. It was much closer than that entering the – it was actually just 10-6 entering the third quarter. And then Seattle got hot and scored 16 straight points in the fourth to get that 26-6 win. You look at the team stats. It looks like one team won by 20 points. The Seahawks had 24 first downs to the Lions 13, so beat them almost 2-1 there. Passing first downs were more even. Seattle had 13, Detroit had 10. But the rushing first downs were dominant. 9 first downs for Seattle to only 2 for Detroit. And the 9 first downs, anytime you get around more than around 6 or 7 first downs, it's a good day for a rushing attack. And probably more a better indication of consistent play than rushing yards, because rushing yards, you can always just get one 80 or 70 yarder in there that skews the total. A team that gets 9 first downs on the ground in a game is a team that is getting good run after good run after good run. And that also shows up in the third down numbers. Seattle went 9 of 16 on third downs. That's 56%. They also were 2 for 2 on fourth downs. And for Detroit, it was exactly the opposite. 2 for 11 on third downs, very bad, and 0 for 2 on fourth downs. Total yardage went to Seattle, 387 to 231. Total plays went Seattle's way, 71 to 50. Average game per play, 5.5 for Seattle to 4.6 for Detroit. And the dominance is especially evident on the ground. 177 rushing yards for Seattle to only 49 for Detroit. More than twice as many carries as well, 38 to 15. And the average game was a big plus for Seattle, 4.7 to 3.3. Seattle was tackled 3 times for a loss to Detroit's only 1. But it's okay if you don't hit guys in the backfield as long as you limit them to 1 or 2 yards per carry, which is what Seattle did by and large. Passing yards a lot more even as Seattle was killing clock and Detroit was in desperate comeback mode. 210 for Seattle to 182 for Detroit. That does include sack yardage. Both teams have 3 sacks. Completion and attempt numbers were pretty close. Detroit went 18 for 32. Seattle went 23 for 30. Yards per pass play, including sacks, big edge for Seattle, 6.4 to 5.2. Really, the only area where Seattle did not have the edge here was punting. Not a good day for John Ryan, only 37 yards per average per punt. The Detroit Lions, whose punter's name escapes me, we'll check that in a minute, but they had average 46 yards per punt here. And that was about it. The red zone possessions, Seattle had 3 touchdowns and 4 possessions. That's great. The Lions had no touchdowns and no possessions, and that's even greater. The Lions were actually lucky to even get the 6 points here. They were both long field goals of 50 yards plus. And the Lions did not, at any point in this game, they did not have possession of the ball inside Seattle's 30, let alone inside the red zone. Finally, a big edge in time of possession for Seattle, 36 minutes and 39 seconds to 23 minutes and change for Detroit. Now we're going to look at the drive charts for this game. I always like drive charts because they don't tell you what happened, but they also tell you when. And they can really tell you the story of a game. As noted, Detroit's whole philosophy is to get as many plays per drive as they can on both sides of the ball. They want their own offense to grind out clock, and they want the defense to just limit big plays and hope the opponent eventually makes a mistake. And Seattle, by and large, did not. So when you look at the Detroit drives here, there's one good one, really. We got 3 yards, punt. 26 yards, punt. 36 yards and a turnover on downs at the Seattle 38. So the turned down yet another long field goal to try a fourth down play that really, really, really did not work. They tried a play-action bootleg. That's fine. And the first read was clearly a deep route that Seattle had covered. That's fine. But the second read was to a little-used tight end named Matthew Mulligan in the middle of the field behind the line of scrimmage, and Seattle swarmed him for the stop. I don't know what Detroit was thinking about on that one. That was a lousy, lousy play. Anyway, 3 yards punt, 26 yards punt, 36 yards turnover on downs. Minus 3 yards in a punt, and then the last drive they had of the first half, a 42-yard drive, ended in a field goal. They only had one drive in the third quarter. It was their best drive of the day, 61 yards, 4 first downs in that drive, 10 plays, and that also ended in a field goal. And then the fourth quarter, 1-yard punt, 19 yards and a punt, 28 yards and a turnover on downs. For Seattle, a lot more success, especially in the fourth quarter when they were almost literally unstoppable. Started off slow, 7 yards and a punt and 24 yards and a punt in the first quarter. Only had the ball twice in the second quarter, went 60 yards and a touchdown, 51 yards and a field goal. Then he kneeled down at the end of the half. Third quarter, only had the ball once, a 36-yard drive ending in a punt. And then in the fourth quarter, we go 66 yards field goal, 82 yards touchdown, 84 yards touchdown. And Seattle put the nail in the coffin there. They also had one more drive ending a 2-yard loss in the end of the game. We will get into some of the individual stats in a moment here, but before we do, I want to take this opportunity to tell you all about SeatGeek. You know, we are in the playoffs now, football season, and Seattle's on the road this week, but with any luck at all, they'll beat Atlanta this week. They will see Green Bay beat Dallas next week. If those two things happen, then Seattle can still host the NFC Championship game. Either way, SeatGeek is the easiest way to find tickets for the last few games of the season. There's nothing like being in the stadium for the biggest games of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to buy tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for this weekend or any game this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket, because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That is why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You will immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Now, here is how you get that. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, you download the SeatGeek app. You go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. You can enter the promo code LOSEAHAWKS. It stands for Locked On Seahawks, and it's just LOSEAHAWKS. Download the app, go to the settings tab, enter the promo code LOSEAHAWKS. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you have made your first purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LOSEAHAWKS today. All right, well, while we've got a break here, let's take a look at what else is going on around the Locked On Podcast Network. Over at the mothership, Locked On NFL, Matt Williamson has his review of all the wildcard games, including, of course, Seattle's big win over Detroit. Over at Locked On Fantasy, Vinny Iyer of Sporting News, he's looking back at the four wildcard games, telling you everything he saw from both sides of the lopsided victories by Houston, Pittsburgh, Green Bay, and your Seattle Seahawks. And I've heard that opponent audio can be a fun thing to do in the Seattle area. So you can check out Locked On Lions, where the Lions crew are going to check out what they call the debacle in Seattle. Perhaps they thought debacle was pronounced tobacco. I don't know. Anyway, that is what's going on the Locked On Podcast Network. Check that out today. All right, with that out of the way, let's go ahead and take a look at the individual stats from this Detroit Lions game. For the Lions, they were ugly. I gave you five Lions Seattle must stop last Friday. I did not do the player-by-player breakdown at the beginning of the show like I usually do, because the answer clearly was they stopped all of them. No players on Detroit's offense had a good day. I think that's fair to say. Zach Zenner was the leading rusher, but he only had 11 carries for 34 yards. That's only 3.1 yards per carry, which is bad enough, but keep in mind, literally half those yards came on one run. He only had 17 yards on his other 10 carries. That is 1.7 yards per rush, and that's terrible. Matt Stafford, of course, the leading passer for Detroit, 18 of 32 for 205 yards. Ended up with three sacks, no touchdowns, no interceptions, passer rating of only 75.7. And when you have no interceptions and a passer rating under 80, that tells you that you had big, big, big trouble moving the ball. Leading receiver for Detroit, at least by catches, was also Zach Zenner, who had six catches for 54 yards, all six catches. He caught every pass thrown his way, I should say. The other receivers I mentioned on Friday, Marvin Jones, four catches for 81 yards and seven targets. That's not a terrible day, but not the kind of game they needed, obviously. Golden Tate, three catches for 25 yards and five targets. That's only 5 yards per target. That's very bad. Anquan Boldin had the worst day of all, two catches for 24 yards. In six targets. So first of all, four incompletions. Second of all, only 24 yards receiving. Now you add that to the two personal fouls he had for 30 yards, and he literally had more yards lost in penalties than gained in receptions. And the last player I had for you, on the list of Lions Seattle must stop was Eric Ebron, the tight end, who only had two catches for 23 yards and six targets. For Seattle, obviously a huge day for Thomas Rawls, 27 carries for 161 yards, 6.0 yards per carry is outstanding, Also had a touchdown, a bunch of big runs. Russell Wilson struggled for probably, like I say, about 2.5 quarters. And then in the fourth quarter, I may have started in the third, but he completed each of his last 11 passes with plenty of big gains mixed in there. So his total numbers come out much better than they were looking about after halftime. He finished 23 of 30 for 224 yards. Still less than 10 yards per completion, so not a great day. But as noted, Detroit plays a very, very soft, conservative scheme. Three sacks for Wilson, and at least one of those was definitely his fault. But he had two touchdowns, no interceptions, and a passer rating of 119.3. Leading receiver for Seattle by light years was Doug Baldwin, who had 11 catches and 12 targets. Only 104 yards and 42 of those yards was on one play. So for most of the day for Doug, it was just short and ineffectual gain after short and ineffectual gain after short and ineffectual gain. Paul Richardson, of course, was the highlight of had the highlight catches, the one-handed catch in the end zone and the other down the sideline. Three catches for 48 yards with a touchdown and four targets. Jimmy Graham, not a big part of the offense. Three catches for 37 yards and four targets. And no one else had more than two catches. So there's your receiving numbers. Sam Martin is Detroit's punter. I forgot to mention earlier. 46-yard gross average, 45-yard net with two punts down inside the 20. Just one punt return allowed. As Devin Hester, as I expected, was very quiet. But, hey, he managed to his job was to field punts and not make a debacle out of it. There's that word again. So he had three fair catches that stopped the ball from bouncing farther and pinning Seattle deep, and that's all he was there for. John Ryan, three punts. Net average is 37.7. Long of 44, so the other two must have been really bad. And no other major noise in the special teams game. All right, finally, the defensive numbers for Detroit. Leading tackler was linebacker Tahir Whitehead. The player who probably had the best game for Detroit was Ezekiel Ansah. Two sacks, also had two tackles for loss and five quarterback hits. So he was causing trouble for Seattle all day. Other than that, there's not much to this. Haloti Ngata had a sack and one other quarterback hit. A couple other guys had a hit here and there, but no one other defense had any major stats other than just tackles. And you can get all the – pardon me. You can get all the tackles you want, but you rush for 160 yards. It really doesn't matter. For Seattle, leading tacker, as usual, Bobby Wagner also has a tackle for loss, also had a quarterback hit. Cliff Averill was the big playmaker with two sacks, two tackles for loss, and two hits. Michael Bennett had a sack, tackle for loss, a hit, and a pass defensed. Richard Sherman pissed a shutout. I don't believe one pass was thrown his direction. He still somehow wound up with three tackles. And Deshaun Shedd just had the one tackle, but he had three passes defensed. So three big breakups there. So there you go. Pretty much a butt-kicking by Seattle from start to finish. So that is going to do it for today. We will be back throughout the week with our friends in Locked On Falcons to preview the divisional round game, see if Seattle can pull off the upset there. You can be sure to follow us on Twitter, at Locked Seahawks. You can also like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnSeahawks. Drop us a line at LockedOnSeahawks@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. That is going to do it for today. Thank you for listening, and go Hawks.
You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily podcast on the Seattle Seahawks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.